today, which has confused Effie because he went to the old room. He's here now, though. There's some sort of jackbooted dominatrix walking up and down outside. So,
but they're not mine.
If you can hear sort of the stride of heels, so here they come. Yeah, nice.
Anyway, try not to be distracted by that as we glide gracefully into the Tux Radar podcast series 4, episode 23. I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Ben Efrod.
I'm Efrain Hernandez.
And I'm Graham Morrison.
And in this episode, we'll be discussing all sorts of news. I guess there's about 2.5 inches of news there. We'll be unleashing our discoveries upon the world, talking about rants and raves, speaking your brains.
Oh, no, speak your brains. Oh, I haven't no had brains. Any brains.
Oh, well, sorry about that. And there'll be an open ballot, which, as ever, is an alternative conduit for your brains. So if you like the sound of that and you'd like to subscribe to something resembling the Tux Radar podcast, but better.
On dead trees.
On dead trees. Or on electrons.
Dead electrons.
Yes. You can subscribe to Linux Format at tinyurl.com/LXFoffer1. There's an extra special Christmas offer. Has anyone checked to see how special the Christmas offer is?
No, really, it's not our job. We just create the stuff,
and we leave it to our direct marketing executive, Craig, to market it.
Work out how much it's worth.
Yeah, I do have some numbers written down here, though. What's that? £51.92 for a whole year. That's for 13 issues. And it's really good value, like, because compared to most other magazines, like Vogue, we have very few adverts. So,
and very few staff.
Yes. So lots more Linux content in Linux format than in, I'd say, all other magazines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right.
I reckon.
Yeah.
Right, with that fairly lame plugging. it's time to segue neatly into the news, which isn't lame at all.
Okay, so in the news this fortnight, the UN, or the ITU, the International Telecommunications Union, a branch of the UN, is having a meeting to decide the future of the internet. Basically, they say, well, it's just a nice little chat about what's going to happen, we're not going to change anything. Everyone else is a little bit sceptical of that. Most people have weighed in and said everything they want to do is a bad idea. Tim Berners-Lee of web inventing fame isn't impressed. The EU isn't impressed. Google isn't impressed. Russia is impressed.
Another cause for concern.
Russia and Syria are impressed.
Basically, the sort of ruling of the internet, if you like, on a legal level, was put in place in 1988, and this time the ITU wants to modernise it and say that, well, the Russian proposal is that all member countries of the ITU, which is 193 of them, so almost every country in the world, bar two or one, depending on how you count countries.
And have you been to those two countries?
No, but I have been to one country that doesn't take part in it.
Doesn't even exist!
I win.
Ben wins.
All member countries should have an equal say in how it's ruled, which on the surface doesn't sound entirely unreasonable, but when you look into what countries have been doing with internet, this would mean things like when a government imposes an internet blackout, it could have legal implications for people who then try and help their citizens get access to the internet, that sort of thing. And the sort of general consensus around most people involved in the internet is it's not broke, don't let the UN go anywhere near it because they tend to break stuff.
Yeah.
What are the main changes anyway?
Well, it's being discussed at the moment, so...
So we don't know.
We don't know.
The ITU... It's not going to affect the democracy and within the internet or something
Well,
like that,
so. It could do. Like I say, we don't know. The ITU insists it's a very open and transparent process, but they won't tell us. it's the usual political stuff. They're going through it now, and... well, hopefully by the next podcast we can bring you news of the outcome. But at the moment, We don't know. So on to more Linux-related news. Fedora 18 have added Mate and Cinnamon to the beta release. So
hooray.
Excellent.
Hooray.
It's brilliant. Definitely think it's the right decision.
Yes.
Yeah, for their survival as well as for expanding the world of choice and supporting Mate and Cinnamon.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. Yeah, there's no word there, but we assume GNOME will still be the default GNOME 3. But these will just add more choice. In almost Red Hat, but just not quite Red Hat related news, Matthew Garrett has released...
It's Matthew Garrett ex Red Hat?
He's just left, yeah.
Right. Why has he left?
I've just gone to another job, I think.
Oh, okay, so it's not to do with, I've created this shim bootloader, oh, you're sacked.
Not as far as I'm aware, if you have insight.
No, I don't know. Although, I just remember reading the mailing list, and there were slightly cagey kind of all queries, you know, regarding that what you're about to say should be directed to Matthew rather than us.
Well, this is because it's separate from Red Hat's method, so they may, it's something he's done rather than something he's done as part of the project.
Right.
So part of the company. Yeah, so he's created the shim bootloader, which will allow, it'll basically allow anything to boot on a Windows 8 certified machine without having to disable secure boot. Essentially what it does is it adds another layer of keys. So you've got the keys that are installed by the manufacturers, which will probably only be Microsoft's key, possibly might be Red Hat's and Canonical's as well, we don't know yet. But this will allow you to install your own keys without going through the hassle of the BIOS and everything. And so distros can self-sign their keys and put in any additional security they want to. They could do a fully signed chain if they wish to create a properly secure distro. They could not do. And just whack this bootloader on. And with a little bit of user intervention, they'll just be able to boot into Linux.
Just a question, because for non-technical people, that, well, to me, it still sounds a little bit complex, the subject. So if I want to buy a new machine that is Windows certified, and I want to install, let's say, Mint, with this new bootloader, does the installation of the distro becomes more complicated or is as easy as before?
We haven't actually got our hands on a Windows 8 certified machine, so we can't say for sure, but it shouldn't be. It'll probably just be an extra step saying,
right,
da-da-da, press enter to continue. Something along those lines, right. You might have to type in a key. The wording of it implies that you don't have to actually enter the key. It should be stored on the media, but it's hard to say for sure. It shouldn't be difficult anyway. Right. When we can actually get our hands on some of the hardware, we'll let you guys know for sure.
It's good news, though. It's great news.
Yeah.
Is what he's doing part of the standard? Is it legitimate what he's doing as a way of using one set of keys to load another set of keys?
Yeah, I mean, it's been signed by Microsoft.
Right.
So it's not a sort of jailbreak or anything like that.
Right.
He hasn't bypassed security. It's a legitimate way of doing it.
Cool.
Which means that we're still legal.
Well, I was just wondering, yeah. Just,
yeah.
Well, it means, one, that it's still legal, and two, it won't be broken in future updates. Yeah. If it was sort of a hack around the side, then an update to the firmware could stop it.
Cool.
On to tablets news. The Peng Pong have just crowdfunded a dual-booting Linux and Android tablet. Comes in two forms, a 7-inch version and a 10-inch version. For their pre-orders that may, I think, have closed now, it's $120 for the 7-inch version and $185 for the 10-inch version, so it's pretty good value. Yeah. They haven't been fully built, so we can't say exactly what they're like yet, but it's certainly expanding the Linux tablet space, since we're still waiting for the Vivaldi.
Yeah, yeah.
Still waiting.
That's great news. I think I saw some story as well where it's getting easier to compile normal Linux desktop applications and have them run on Android, which might make the whole thing even more interesting if people start doing that.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I didn't look into it too deeply, but I think using some kind of third-party layer, it's now easier to just run Linux apps on an Android tablet.
That's cool.
Without doing anything else.
Yeah.
Other than some compatibility layer.
Yeah. It's a real shame that the Vivaldi project has been held up for so long, because the Plasma Active desktop, mobile Plasma, whatever they're calling it nowadays, looks really, really good.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get on in a couple of news items. We can do it as a next news item. We can rejiggle the news. onto something in that area. But yeah, just one more thing on the before we move on from the tablets is Canonical have been doing a lot of work to get Ubuntu running on the Nexus 7, and it looks really good. We haven't got our hands on one, but they're hoping to have it properly supported by the next release. I think we mentioned it in a previous podcast. So it's looking like next year we could have a lot of options for Linux tablets.
Or buy any kind of decent Android tablet and do what you want with it, which is brilliant.
Yeah. So yeah, more mobile Linux news is that Yola, as I've now learned it's pronounced, have just released their... Well, they haven't released, they've launched their Sailfish platform, which is based on Migo and Mir. And these are the guys who have left Nokia and have set up on their own to create their own smartphone/tablet operating system based on Qt. It looks really cool. From their videos, it kind of looks like a bit of a mash between Android and Windows Phone 8. It's got that sort of square blocky thing of Windows Phone 8, but it's got...
So they've created... That's their kind of shell sitting on top of Android, is it?
Well, it's hard to say. They say it's based on Migo and Mir, which isn't based on Android. However, in their videos, there were some screens which had Android logos on them.
Yeah. But it sounds more like it's like an implementation of the Qt port to Android.
I haven't been able to delve through the software stack. One thing that is really cool about it is that Android apps will run unmodified on it. Using the Alien Dalvik layer, which I think first launched in the N9.
Old Nokia Alien, smartphone. That sounds like that package manager tool that converts between one package to another.
And devs.
Yeah.
But I don't think it is. I think it's basically a version of the Dalvik virtual machine to run on.
Oh, right, okay.
Run on this.
So it can't be Android running in the background then?
It might be an Android kernel.
It's Migo.
That's great news because obviously one of the big issues for new platforms is the apps available. So straight off the cuff, they'll have, well, certainly all the open source Android ones they can just stick on themselves. And it'll be a huge incentive to get app developers over to it. And it just looked really good, just really smooth, really modern. I'd definitely like to try it when it comes out and is finally launched.
We're going to the space section.
We're not going to the space section yet.
Oh, what?
We are staying in exploration.
Okay.
A Linux-powered boat has just swum from San Francisco to Australia.
I saw that story, although I never realised it was Linux. The BBC never mentioned it.
No, it didn't. I saw the news story on the BBC, and I assumed it was Linux, and I delved through it, and it turned out it was.
Good journalist skills.
I used Google. It wasn't that taxi.
That was one step beyond me. But it looked awesome, wasn't it? It looked like half a surfboard with solar panels put on top, and then underneath it, like a parallel fins that, from the article anyway, they used the power of the wave to propel the whole craft forward.
Yeah, I mean, basically the way it works is you've got these two boards, one that floats on the surface, one that's about 7 meters below the surface. And the idea is the height of a wave is bigger on the surface than it is below the surface. So when a wave comes, the top one goes up more than the bottom one, so it expands and contracts. And as it does that, basically the bottom board wobbles and it sort of creates a swimming motion like the back tail of a dolphin.
Wow.
And that's what drives it forward. And this is the longest journey ever by an autonomous vehicle.
That's fantastic. Cool.
Yeah.
And there's like two or three of them still out in the ocean.
Yeah, they launched four. They launched two going to Japan and two going to Australia. And this is the first one to arrive anywhere. The others, I believe, are still going. They haven't crashed or sunk or anything.
It's really cool. I mean, one of them, I did read that one of them has got a technical malfunction and has been rerouted to like Japan for repairs or somewhere like this, wherever it happens to be near to, but not its final destination. It's like every 10 minutes I think that the purpose of them is to do environmental tests in the water, so I guess currents and temperature and things like that, and so they do a test every 10 minutes and then upload the data back to whoever's monitoring it. But it's still really cool. It sounds like a great project, you know, for a school or something, to create one of these craft, put it in the sea, and you know, like a letter in a bottle for the modern age.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, we'll bring you more news when the others reach landfall, hopefully soon. More exploration further afield now, and we're going into space.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Sort of. Project Sputnik.
Which was in space
For the Russians, has now landed by Dell in America, and it's a new Ubuntu-powered laptop, Ubuntu-powered Ultrabook, as people tend to be calling them these days. For anyone who hasn't heard, it's a high-spec laptop that comes with Ubuntu preinstalled, and not just Ubuntu that's sort of been polished and sort of made.
They've been working with Dell, haven't they? The Project Sputnik was a Canonical and Dell working together for 12 months or something to create a separate series of patches on top of 1204, or it might even have been 1110.
Yeah.
It's certainly not cutting-edge Ubuntu, but anyway, the performance is supposed to be brilliant, and it's optimized for virtual machines and charms and all this stuff that Ubuntu Canonical is trying to push.
Yeah, I mean, they've really built it for developers. It's not necessarily targeted at a desktop user, and that's where the virtual machines and the charms come in. So the idea is, if you're working on a cloud app, you can just totter away on your keyboard, hit a button, bang, it's all up in your cloud via Juju, etc., etc., and it all comes pre-configured, ready to roll.
What is it, this language that you speak?
Who travels? Yeah. Remember,
I'm just saying buzzwords I read on Ubuntu.com.
But initially, it was $50 more money than the Windows version, which is quite funny.
Yeah.
But
how much is it now?
It's quite expensive, about $950, $980, or. I don't know, that might be pounds, actually. I think it's 980 quid, but you can't buy it in the UK. Not yet. It's only available in the US, so I don't know, $1,400.
Yeah, the one sort of sticking point that a lot of people have been bringing up is the resolution. It's 1366 by 768.
That's terrible. I know these things don't bother you, but, for a top-of-the-range laptop, I'd want more. Space?
Staying in space. Our news item last fortnight that Curiosity possibly had found aliens. It turns out, we can now bring you an update on that, Curiosity hasn't definitely not found aliens. Basically, they found what they call organic material, which means something with carbon in it, but Curiosity doesn't have the sensors to tell exactly what organic material. So we assume it could tell if it was moving. So it found it in the soil. We don't think it's a worm, but we haven't got conclusive evidence that it's not. But it's probably sort of methane, carbon dioxide.
Was it in a worm shape then?
No.
No, you just made that up.
I just made that up.
I like the idea.
It might have been in a worm shape, I don't know.
Like on Tremors.
Like on Tremors. Yeah, so basically they found something with carbon in, probably something very simple and not once living, but we can't tell what. Coming back down to Earth.
It's what the human's getting up to.
We've launched one of the most confusingly named court cases of all time. We now have Europe v. Facebook v. IDPC, which isn't Facebook. So, to explain that, Europe versus Facebook is an organisation set up in Austria to basically complain about Facebook's data protection and sort of holding data and knowing everything there is about you and all that sort of thing.
The organisation is called Europe versus Facebook.
Yes. And because of Irish law, they can't launch a court case against Facebook. They have to go against the Irish Data Protection Commission, the IDPC, for not stopping Facebook doing it.
Because Facebook is based in Ireland.
Because Facebook is based in Ireland, or at least Facebook Europe is based in Ireland.
Is it?
Well, yeah, I guess the European side of it is.
Yeah.
All right, good.
Only 12.5% corporation tax, as opposed to the recently raised by a single percent in the UK. Is it 21% in the UK?
At the moment it's just kicking off. There's no real news, but...
So what have they done wrong, or what have they not done wrong?
There's a few things. They've amassed vast amounts of information about you. One of the key sticking points is when they did things like facial recognition on photos without asking people about it. They also have this... they're obliged to tell you what they know about you under data protection law. You can go knocking on the door and say, "Oi, Facebook, I'm Ben. What do you know about me?" And they have to tell you. And they don't. They drag their feet in the sand. They've been only releasing partial information. They've been not deleting information that people have asked to be deleted. All this sort of thing. And to be honest, the Irish Data Protection Commissioner has sort of done nothing. I've personally asked Facebook to release the data they've got about me, and they just haven't responded. That was about 6 months ago when I was researching the Beat the CIA article. I mean, I haven't chased it up because the publishing deadline passed and I couldn't be bothered to chase it up.
Do they have an obligation to do it within a certain amount of time?
Yeah, I think it's 60 days, but off the top of my head, I could be wrong.
Yeah, so just our normal data protection laws?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It's the same. We can certainly point out that that's one case where they've broken their obligations, and that's by no means unusual from the data amassed by Europe versus Facebook. So, we'll see what happens. And staying in the courtroom, Apple and Samsung are back in court in America on the other side of the pond. Well, they should be today, I think they start. A few things. This is basically, as you're probably aware, the previous court case ended with Samsung owing $1.05 billion to Apple for infringing patents. In this case, Apple's asking for more money. Samsung's asking for the whole thing to be thrown out.
Double jeopardy.
Yeah. Double or quit. A few things have come up. Apple's withdrawn one of their patents from the case. Basically, they'd patented the same thing twice. And if they'd kept them both in the case, Samsung could have gone, well, you've patented that twice. One of them's got to be invalid. So Apple have withdrawn one of the patents, and this allows them to keep it so they could potentially drop it in the future. So if the patent they've remained in the case for whatever reason was ruled invalid, they could go, waha, we've got another one identical to it.
You make a brilliant lawyer.
Silly humans.
Yeah.
Let's go back to space.
So it's back in space, looking down on America into the courtroom. One of the big things coming into the case is that it turned out that the foreman of the jury lied when he was asked about previous court cases. Mm-hmm. Apple said that was Samsung's own fault for not finding out about this and rejecting him as a potential juror. So Samsung said, well, hang on, if we should have known, that means surely you must have known. And this sort of put Apple in an awkward spot, because either they could say, yes, we knew the foreman lied, in which case that's bad. You can't withhold that sort of information from the court. Or they could not have known, which would have obviously pointed out their argument that Samsung should have known was stupid. And so they decided to just keep their mouth shut, put their fingers in their ears and pretended nothing was going on. But they got slapped with a motion to compel, which is basically the judge tells them they have to say what they
need. Take your fingers out your ears.
Take your fingers out your ears and act like grown-ups. And they admitted that actually they had no idea that he lied either. just recently, the Apple's agreement with HTC over licensing of patents has been opened. So you can go and download that and have a look at it. However, the royalty terms have been blacked out. You can't see how much they're being paid. But you can see more or less everything else. Samsung have been allowed to see how much they've been paid. It's just as mere mortals that aren't allowed to see it. I haven't had a chance to go through it in detail yet. It looks like standard, fairly legal document. Let's use each other's patents. And the crucial point about that is about blocking products from import, because one of the things Apple have done, they've blocked Samsung from being able to sell those products in America. The reason they were allowed to do that is because they insisted that their own intellectual property was so valuable they wouldn't ever license it for anything at all, ever. And therefore, rather than fine, that fine wouldn't be enough to compensate them. So they had to block the inputs. Obviously, since they've now licensed their products, that was clearly rubbish. So that makes it much harder for them to get an input back. It's similar to what happened in Motorola versus Microsoft recently. Motorola wasn't granted a sales ban on Microsoft products that infringed on Motorola's patents, because it was decided that if they were infringing, a fine would be enough, because they would be willing to license it. And that brings us back down to the earth at the end of the news.
Awesome news section, thanks.
Yeah, good news.
It's difficult to follow news, and that's saying something, because for a long time news was just, I don't know,
rubbish, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, where is Jonathan now, eh?
Earning lots of money.
Yeah.
Actually, at the top of Hacker News.
A couple of days ago. With the Jane Silber interview.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. John lives on the internet.
Yeah.
Like Obi-Wan Kenobi.
And in our magazine, he's been writing some brilliant stuff for us.
We struck him down and he came back more powerful than we could possibly imagine.
Right. Discovery of the week, Fortnite thing. Does anybody want to go first?
Yeah, me.
Go on.
Wow.
Walking home from the pub recently on a bright, cold, chilly December starry night, I looked up at the moon and saw a bright celestial object next to the moon. And I thought, I wonder what that is. And then I thought, I know, when I get in, I can install Stellarium and I can find out. And I did just that, and it was Jupiter.
Ah,
it was Jupiter right next to the moon. It was really, really bright and really big. And there was some other, and it was, you could see it moving in real time. So it obviously wasn't a star. It was like a satellite or a planet or a moon or something. And then,
Or a UFO.
Or a UFO. That's no moon. I downloaded it, and it took a couple of minutes and installed it. And I got my answer. It's Jupiter. And then the next, like, hour and a half was completely wasted.
Not wasted, surely.
Clicking about on all sorts of really complicated buttons, which, and I didn't know what they meant, but they somehow became really intuitive. And just looking at the out and pondering the vastness of space, and then there's all these, you can overlay the star systems with constellations, and not just the ancient Greek and Roman ones, but there's Incas or Aztecs, or I get them all mixed up from
they're all the same
Colombians, yeah. I don't know, and Korean, and and you just wonder, like, what did the ancients walked home from the pub and they saw Jupiter next to the moon, what they thought it was, like a giant scorpion or something. I thought, just really, really cool. And you can look and you can move your location about, so you can see what the night sky looks like where you are, or where your relatives are in Wales or Colombia or wherever else. It's just excellent. Really, really, really cool.
It's a brilliant, it's a fantastic application.
But it's a toy. You feel like you're playing with the vast infiniteness of space.
Stellarium is probably the best open source piece of astronomy software, and it's the application I left off in the space roundup of astronomy software. many years ago,
it was about spreadsheets, wasn't it?
I didn't realize it works in real time.
Yeah, you can leave it running.
Oh, right.
And it just does it, yeah.
You turn on, there's some layer that you can turn on and watch satellites.
Yeah.
And you can watch satellites just zipping through all these constellations, and it's magic. It's
my God.
Magic.
It's full of stars.
Full of stars.
It reminds me of there was a Chrome app or plugin by Google that let you, just a couple of weeks ago, that let you fly from our position in the galaxy right out to the edges of the universe, which was, or our galaxy, I think. I can't remember if it left the galaxy or not, but that was very, very cool.
There's also a Google app for Android that you can put it on your phone, and you can hold it up, and it tells you, uses your compass and your sensors, what's it.
Yeah.
Augmented reality.
Exactly.
That is very cool. Excellent. Thanks, Andrew. Anyone else?
I got two. 2 weeks ago, someone asked me if I knew any applications on Android, sketching or drawing applications for professional illustration and so on and so on, painting. And I found one called Autodesk Sketchbook Pro. It's only £3, 11 pence. And it works just as a combination between Photoshop and Illustrator, or Toxpaint and Inkscape, that sort of thing.
Game. Right. Yeah.
It works on tablets, which are from 6 inches upwards.
So it doesn't work on your phone?
No, it does. It's optimized for tablets, right, except for sketching. And has really cool brush facilities, and it works with a stylus as well, so it works with pressure. It's really, really cool because it also has symmetric drawing. So if you're drawing a human body, for instance, you can draw one side of the body and automatically it sketches the other.
Yeah, or the face.
If you're drawing, say for instance, one eye, it draws automatically the other one. Then afterwards can be edited. So it's absolutely super cool, and it's really, really cool. The only thing that I haven't actually found out whether you have to buy the stylus separately, or is a specific stylus that you have to use, or whether it's a standard stylus for the Android tablets.
I'm sure there's because it's not by pressure, but they emulate pressure by the amount of contact.
Yeah, well, you have to set the presets anyway or the brushes, but it has fade outs. For instance, if you press in the stylus a little bit hard, then you know it's automatically that it has to draw a longer stroke.
They're pretty generic.
They're really rich, but it's really, really cool. It's also, it's a multi-touch. You can use you don't have to use the stylus. Obviously, you can use just the finger as well, and do splashes and stuff like that. But it's really, really cool. I thought for professional illustrators, it's just a fantastic tool. Fantastic tool.
I recently tried another Autodesk app that I can't remember what it was called now because I deleted it. But you left your phone to take like 30 photographs of an object on a desk, and it created a 3D model of it.
Wow.
That you could export or roam around it. It's free, and it was all done in the cloud, so it sent all the photos off from there, and they're probably...
They generate it.
Whatever their super powerful software is, 3D Studio Max or whatever, does all the calculations.
Yeah, but the reason why I find out about this is because this kid that was doing a GCSE... doing his GCSEs at the moment, he's really interested in doing graphics, and I told him not to go into graphics directly, and should find alternatives. And he's a really good comic drawer. That's what he wants to do, and it's just perfect, absolutely perfect for that. And at that price, I mean, if you want to buy anything professional for a desktop, how much are you paying for an Adobe?
Pieces of software are
just absolutely ridiculous. So, but this has the facility to be exported as JPEGs and so on, or PNGs and then printed and so on and so on. So you can create your own proper portfolio with it. So that's that.
Cool.
And I discovered Bell's palsy as well.
But you didn't really discover it. I imagine your wife discovered it.
Well,
no,
it was my father-in-law discovered it.
I imagine Mr. Bell discovered it, actually.
Well, no, he did, no.
Or Mrs. Bell discovered it.
No sexism.
You're looking very odd.
That's the reason why is because I'm a sufferer at the moment of it. And it's interesting. It's an interesting illness that
doesn't
have a cure. Well, it's an infection of the nerve that controls the movement of the muscles or the face of one side of the face. So it gives you temporary paralysis on certain muscles on the face. The nerve gets swollen, and that affects the ramifications of the same nerve that connects to the rest of the muscles, such as the cheek and the lip and so on and so on. So there's no cure, and they don't really know, the doctors or the scientists don't really know how you get it. They think that even a common cold might trigger the infection on the nerve. But the interesting thing is that you don't really notice it yourself. Someone has to notice it for you, because
you don't notice that when you were drinking beer, it kind of dribbles out the left side.
Well, I normally do that though. When I get drunk, I just dribble. So there's not great difference. The synchronization of my blinking, but that it's just not. It's not even when I'm totally, utterly rat-assed. So
It must be horrible. I mean, the first thing I think is that I've had a stroke or something.
Well, that's what I thought. Mm. I went to the doctor, and they were testing if I had enough strength on the limbs from that side that it was affected, but they realized I did. So the only alternative was Bell's palsy.
It does rather render the symmetrical drawing feature.
But that's what I mean. That's what that tablet can do. That's why you have to edit it, so you can just drop the left-hand side of the face a little bit more, and then that's that. Yeah, that was pulsing. But anyway, the body cures itself in a matter of months, allegedly.
In a matter of months.
Allegedly, so.
Yeah, but by next summer, you'll be fine.
Yeah, I'll be fine. I'll recover my smile. But hey, George Clooney was a sufferer.
Yeah.
And look at him. Hey.
He's doing all right. Yeah. And so was Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah, and look at him. Anyway, that's it.
Awesome, thanks, Effie.
Okay, so I was on the internet looking at photos of men's toilets.
No, that's going to kill everything.
But it was a Linux forum, and there was a picture of a men's toilet in Germany. And the reason it was there is, while you're doing your business, as a urinal, and no. There's interesting facts you can read to keep you occupied. And talking about, it was a WC. Now, WC is the English for water closet. Also, in its lowercase, it's the Unix command for counting words in a text file.
Really? It said that?
Wow. So, if you're in Germany, you can learn your command line utilities while doing your business. And women claim they're good at multitasking.
No. you're going to get comments after that.
Yeah, it's difficult to. Is that it?
No, there was one.
Which means is that is.
Just admitted to the world, I look at pictures of urinals on the internet.
It's all for research.
It's all for research. Yeah. That's what I tell our IT security team. I've been discovering Manjaro as well. It's an Arch derivative, and one of the things that sort of hasn't put me off Arch, that sort of stopped me installing it, is that I've always had this impression that it takes so long to get a system up and running. Once it's up and running, you know, it's great and whatever. But I was just having a quick blast with Manjaro, and I just sort of idly tapped enter a few times on the install screen, and suddenly I had a graphical system up and running that was all Arch based, so you could then use it with the Arch repositories and had it all going. So, that was great. For people who read my previous blog post about OpenSUSE, this isn't what I'm moving my main desktop to. I'm going to do a vanilla Arch install in a few weeks when I get the time. This is just something I was having a play with as it was a new release.
Awesome. Cool. It does look great. I mean, a couple of people mentioned it in the comments to the Open Ballot. My discovery is kind of Linux related, but I bought an arcade machine on eBay. It was cheap. It was only £200. It's an old Puzzle Bubble cabinet, and I'm going to. A year ago or so, I put together a MAME machine that I plugged into the TV, but I decided that I really wanted the real thing, so I bought this machine. The cool thing about most cabinets is they use this standard called Jammer, which is like an interfacing standard between all the controls in the board and the motherboard with the game on it. And it's so that people who own these things can switch the game as trends and things change, but they don't have to change the cabinet or the controls. And the great thing about if you're doing this in Linux is that you can buy a board called a JPAC or an IPAC board that converts those controls into keyboard commands that can either be plugged into your computer by USB or a PS2 adapter. There's great debates about latency of USB and how that affects your gaming experience. So hardcore people use old motherboards and PS2 inputs. But all of this works brilliantly with Linux, and it's all. And the great thing about JPEG-PAC connectors is that they're configured to MAME default keys. So all you really need to do is, if you can get a cheap cabinet, is get one of these JPEG connectors, plug it into the Jammer port, which my machine has got, plug it into your PC, and you're up and running within minutes. There's a slight complexity that I haven't looked into with arcade monitors work at 15 hertz. So they're difficult to source, but if you've got one, and they're difficult to drive from a normal graphics card. So you need a special graphics card, or at least an old one that can go down to that frequency. But you can plug your graphics card into the screen through the JPEG port as well. And that's it. Anyway, this is my kind of continued adventures of putting Linux inside an arcade machine. I did see someone did it with Raspberry Pi and got it up and running quite easily. So cool. Massive arcade machine, 100 kilograms in weight, and then tiny little Raspberry Pi on the shelf at the back. That's my discovery.
Sounds like when the zombie apocalypse arrives, you'd be able to take shelter inside it.
Yeah,
you could. I mean, I think you'd be safe. Because it took two of us to just move it 10 metres, a few metres into the garage, which is where it is now. It's freezing cold, so I'm there with a whiskey and my scarf around my head, playing games.
That's ace.
That's it. That's right. It is time for the halfway reminder. Still to come, we have rants and raves. We don't have any speak your brains, but we do have an open ballot. It's time for rants and raves. Raves. Has anybody got any rants and raves? Or should we skip it again like we did last time?
No, can I pray something?
Yeah, just yeah, sure.
Well, normally... Well, do I need like a minute? Or do I just because I just say it?
All kinds seems pointless. Just say it.
I'd say, yeah, okay. Well, normally when I travel to Mexico on my own and I come back to the UK, I probably fairly get stopped about 3 times after leaving the plane, arriving at the airport. And I normally get stopped about 3 times by the immigration officers. Just because I look a little bit dodgy, I suppose.
And you look incredibly dodgy now with that Bell's palsy.
Oh, my, I look terrible.
You look like you've been on a week's bender in Mexico City.
But funny enough, you're saying that, right? This time I came back from Mexico, I didn't get stopped once. I managed to get to my luggage belt destination, got my bag, and even in customs I wasn't even stopped. I was expecting them to stop me. So thank you immigration officers and customs officers. It's not a call to you, I just thank you. For the first time ever since I've been living in this country and I travel to Mexico and back, I haven't been stopped because of the way I look. That's that. Thank you.
So you've been able to bring the cocaine?
Absolutely. Awesome. Go on. Awesome. I don't. Just for legal reasons, I don't have any of that stuff.
Maybe it's not the way you look. Maybe it's the way you smell.
It's probably the way I walk.
Or the way... It could be anything.
Anything. It's probably the way I dress.
Have you done your hair differently? Is that it?
It's just because I got... A massive tattoo that says I love drugs or something like that.
Okay, well, Effie single-handedly saved that section.
That's it, thank you. Thank you. Anytime.
Let's skip.
Speak your brains.
That brings us to speak your brains. We don't have any brains. So that brings us with a flourish to open ballot.
It's the penultimate podcast today. So,
well, we're not doing any more
of the year.
Oh, right.
Penultimate of the year. So we asked, we thought we'd, one of those questions that's nice to just round things off with. What was your best distro? What was your favourite distro of 2012? What was the best?
I think it turned into a really legitimate question.
I do. And if anyone hasn't read all of the comments in the open ballot, which was posted on Tuesday, December the 4th, they should do so, because you know the diversity of people's opinions is really nice to see.
And there isn't a flame war. It's just, you know, we thought it might be, and we didn't do it for that reason. But it's been lots of very interesting comments.
The thing that I mean, we were sort of, from the coverage that it's had and from the various reader feedback that we've received over the year, I was expecting Mint to come out on top, which it duly did. I think 16 people out of 50-odd said that Mint was their favourite distro of 2012. But running at a close second with 12 votes for was Ubuntu, which was a bit of a surprise. Now, you've been using Ubuntu 12.04, haven't you, Ben?
Yeah. Well, not the last couple of months, but yeah, I used it for several months. I really like it. I think Unity's become good. I think there's still stability issues there. And there's performance issues with the newer version. But in principle, I think it's come a long way from the first version. So I think it's a really good desktop.
Awesome.
Well, I mean, I was just going to say that I spent the whole of last week attempting to upgrade the TuxRadar server to
Ubuntu 12.04, and while it's not done yet, I mean, it was a brilliant. It's a brilliant distribution, especially on the server level. After using Arch so much, it's just so nice to get updates piped to you, packages easily installed, and a lot of support. You know that if you run into problems with Ubuntu and you Google up that problem, that you're far more likely to find people with the same problem who have found a solution, which is just brilliant.
Was that an implicit criticism of Arch?
No, it's not. It's not. It's just that. It's just the power of the community, the power of so many people using the same distribution, and also a very solid distribution itself. Yeah, there's just, if you look at Arch, there are so many people having so many different issues that it's difficult to, often difficult. I don't know if I trust Arch. I don't know enough about Linux, actually, to be honest, to set it up for a server that's going to have half quarter of a million hits a month and trust in my own abilities. I'd rather some expert does that for me.
It's a surprise that Ubuntu came on top, do you think?
It's a surprise that it... I think it's a surprise that it came so close to the top.
Not so close to it.
I wasn't expecting it to be the best thing of 2012, but it's had so many brickbats thrown at it over the last year or two that I'd have thought that the fickle mob would have moved on completely.
See, I think this is just the fact that it's a vocal minority that have been shouting about it, but the silent majority have just been using it and getting on with it, and... And it is still a really good OS, despite what a lot of people would say. It's got its quirks, like every distro does.
It is. Let's get onto the comments. Popey says, the best is the one you choose to run. Thanks for that, Popey. It's not... that's really constructive.
He does say, he does go on to say it's Ubuntu.
He does say, yes, Ubuntu 12.04 for the win. Debbie and Dave says...
Ubuntu.
Debbie and Mint. Which is the version of Mint which has Mate, of course. Senior systems analyst Dominic says Linux Mint 13. Anonymous says Ubuntu 12.04 has taken the world by storm. Beardy Jesse, isn't it time we had a distro that you could install and think, ooh, this looks the same, but as you use it, you find the tweaks and improvements. Yeah, I guess so.
I guess he's saying don't shock the new user into Unity straight away. You know, give them the facility, like we've always said, but just don't make the assumption at the beginning.
Neil Munro says, I'm running 12.10, that would be Ubuntu 12.10 on my laptop. I really want the latest GIMP because my laptop is fairly new. I must be one of the few individuals that noticed the massive performance increase rather than the regressions you hear about all the time. Do you need to upgrade from Ubuntu 12.04 to 12.10 to get the latest GIMP?
Yeah, you do. You probably do. I don't know specifically, but Ubuntu's policy is that they don't do feature upgrades to packages. They just do security updates. Unless you use a PPA or something like that, you have to...
Right.
Update to the next distribution.
That makes sense, yeah. He says he has two other machines that aren't as new and they run 12.4 flawlessly. It's only my reluctance to add PPAs to my system that I upgraded my laptop. That makes sense. Neil Munro says, I have to agree with Ubuntu 12.04. Hang on, that's him. Just write that out. Sorry, everybody. Ubuntu, ex-Zubuntu Mint, Anonymous Beaver says, Zubuntu 12.x, can someone tell me why Mint is really loved? I've only read that the difference is that some codecs are included, but you can tick a box to install such things during a standard Ubuntu installation.
That's a good question.
What's so good about Mint? Why is Mint so loved?
Well, the big difference between the two is the desktop environment. Mint defaults to either Mate or Cinnamon, depending on which one you download. And that's sticking with the sort of classic GNOME 2 style desktop. You've got the little bar at the bottom, you've got your menu button, etc. What you would call a desktop if you've been using anything since 95 up until quite recently.
But it's also what you were saying before, because I was an Ubuntu user before, and it's the performance in certain machines that is not up to scratch, and you can install Mint in any machine and it works fine. It works without any sort of problems with the right kind of a speed. So,
well, I think there's a difference there between Mate and Cinnamon. I have had performance issues with Cinnamon a few times, but Mate does seem to be
But even if you run it with a classic GNOME desktop environment, it works really fast, Mint. So,
well, it sounds like you guys are having a really good discussion about Mint and the various pros and cons of it and why it's just so awesome. Maybe we should do a whole cover feature on it.
Maybe we should.
Yeah.
When for, do you reckon?
Well, let's make it this issue that we're
this
working
issue.
On.
Yeah.
That'll be out very early January.
It will.
We can celebrate all things Mint in it.
We've only got about a week and a half to do it. Can we manage that?
I think we can.
I'm sure you two can.
It'll be a great if it goes to the pub. Yeah.
I'm already recovered from that bender back in Mexico, so I'm all right.
Well, Xiaoj goes some way towards answering Anonymous Beaver's question when he says, it's not the distro that I'm voting. Oh, sorry, he's going to throw in his vote for Mint. Not tried Mint 14 yet. Actually, I don't care which version you go for. It's not the distro that I'm voting for. It's the community. Mm. Something breaks, they fix it. You think a package improvement needs making, they listen. The distro might not be 100% perfect, but at least they care about what you think perfection means. There are many big names that can't say that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Check it out.
Spiegel 66, I think the 14 release of Slackware is brilliant. There's an almost lone voice for Slackware. Somebody else, the acolyte of the church Volkerding, not verified, says systemd, upstart, gnome, pulse audio, recommended packages, turn away from your decadent life of dependency resolution, your disgusting love of needless complexity, your sinful disregard for KISS and POSIX, and turn towards the one true distribution. Signed
is
off
BSD?
His Holiness Patrick Volkerding. could be Mic OS. That's great. So, yeah, Slackware. Yeah.
Not enough KISS in our office life.
Yeah.
These crazy, crazy nights.
Serge says Chakra, Manjaro and Arch Linux. Who mentioned Manjaro? Only mere minutes ago.
Ben.
Yes.
Both Chakra and Manjaro are simple, stable, up-to-date and rolling releases. And as we now know, easy to install.
Yeah.
Debian
and on the disk?
On the disk.
One of them, will be.
Yeah, ooh, which one?
Manjaro.
Yay, win. Great people vote for Bodhi, PearOS, more for Bodhi, another one for Debian, Puppy, Arch, Ubuntu.
Quite
12.
A few for Puppy I saw, which is good. No, people saying not only is it a great rescue system, but other people saying it's the antidote to all, another antidote to all of this feature bloat.
Feature bloat. Like huge desktop environments that need
it is true
mega flops of RAM.
I can see
run.
There's Zen in it because, you know, I don't need all of the facilities that my KDE desktop offers. I don't need them. I just need somewhere to type and something to browse in, you know.
I've really liked Crunchbang for that. I don't think anyone mentioned it.
Yeah, Crunchbang's been very quiet actually because just 12 months ago or 18 months ago it seemed to be on the ascent.
Two more for Puppy Linux there. Mint 14 with Mate gets quite a lot of love.
I guess the main reason why people run Mint is to avoid the GNOME 3 Unity debacle. So
I don't think Cinnamon adds enough to compensate for the amount it slows down some computers. It looks good, but the performance isn't quite there, whereas Mint has just been bang 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 for me.
Well, Patrice Lacouture says Arch released in excess of 366 versions. And each and every one of them rocks, if you ask me.
Did he try each and every one to make sure?
I certainly hope so, if you're going to make such a bold statement as that, Patrice. Age Gap 1, rather worryingly, says Mint Maya 13, OMG, one letter away from Mayan, and 13 is an unlucky number. What does this mean for the end of 2012?
Nothing. I'm from that side of the world, it means nothing.
Nothing. There's, yeah. Craig L says special mention should go to Scientific Linux 6 and other distros for the part they played at CERN.
Yes.
Well done for not ending the world.
Egregious Penguin, Mint 14 with Cinnamon, Popey, Ubuntu 12.4, Open Sousa.
Didn't he start it all
he
off?
He did. Oh, sorry, that's John B., not Popey. 2013 Mayan Prophecy, Ken Bates, not verified. Is that Ken Bates who bought Chelsea for a pound? Or,
I don't know, you tell us.
Well,
if Gary
if only
here.
Gary were here.
Ring him.
He's. I can't, my phone is switched off so as to avoid interference. Gary's busy working on another episode of his football blog,
yeah.
which we should link to in the notes to get him more clicks. So he can monetize it and buy more beer for us. Ken Bates not
for
verified.
Yeah,
for
himself.
Yes. He gave me a bottle yesterday.
Yeah, a bottle yesterday. Mm-hmm. It was quite nice. It was from Arkell's Brewery in Swindon.
Oh man, did I miss out on beer?
Yeah.
It's the last time I take a day off.
They on Lou.
That'll learn, yeah. Ken Bates says, it's all very well for you at Tux Towers to have a laugh about Best Distro 2012 while cocking a snook at your masters in Bunga Bunga Land, but quite frankly, you're missing the point. What the point
is Bunga Bunga Land Italy?
The land of our masters. I don't know. The land of our masters. What the punters want to know is 2013 going to be the year of Linux on the desktop?
We've been holding fire on that particular question.
that's a treat for next issue. Yeah. Let's do it twice.
Just every week. This time.
And that's more about the end of it, really. One last odd bit of praise for Puppy Linux. Dale says, the community is fantastic. It makes geeking out a joy. It's good for a girl or a boy.
Is he trying to make a rhyme?
Possibly, yeah.
Say that again.
The community is fantastic. This is Puppy Linux. And just makes geeking out a joy. It's good for a girl or a boy.
Yeah, it was a rhyme.
Is that a rhyme?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's all the weather.
I'm very disappointed that the Hannah Montana distro didn't make it on the list.
Or that bizarre white supremacist distro.
Satan X.
Yeah, Satanic Ubuntu, featuring music from our very own Jono Bacon. But I think the real winner here is choice.
The real winner here is you, dear listener.
Because choice is good. I think the diversity there, and this is why it is worth going back to the page and reading all the comments rather than our butchered and preceded version, is that there are so many different opinions, and everyone's got a good point. Nobody chooses a distro at random arbitrarily and then sticks with it because they can't be bothered to move anymore. Whatever distro you're running it because it's the best thing for you. And there are so many best things out there. So many things worth trying.
I still got a question, though. If Android is an operating system based on Linux, is that considered as a distro?
It is, really, yeah.
In the question, we did say it was.
All right. Thanks for the answer.
A couple of people said Android, I think. Android on Raspberry Pi.
Yeah. On Raspberry Pi. That's cool.
I guess that's the end of it, then.
Pretty much, yeah.
I have actually got one more thing.
Brilliant.
One more thing is that we have a surplus of awesome badges.
Are these the ones that Brian May has helped smuggle over the border on the Underground Railroad?
Beautifully packaged set of small badges. Featuring, as I remember, the GNOME and KD logos, the Tux, and the Linux format logo. Four badges. Previously, they sold for something like £15.
Did they sell?
They sold, a good couple of dozen of them. So we find ourselves with some to give away. So I thought this was a good time of year to do it because we might be able to get them to you before Christmas. If you email me, graham.morrison@futurenet.com, we will try our very best to put one or two of these boxes in the post to you and get them to you before Christmas for free, gratis, because they're better with you than they are in our stinky storage cupboard.
Do We have a cupboard.
Yeah, we have a shelf. When I had to peel off the Tech Radar sticker.
Oh,
no. So that's it. The penultimate podcast of 2012.
So we're not saying Happy Christmas yet?
Not yet. Next time. Yeah. Next time we thought we'd make... anyway, next time we can talk about it. Have a good couple of weeks and we'll see you then.
Ciao.
Bye.